everyone, and welcome to minute 118 of season 8 of Movie Room, Minute Daily Podcast, where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Dana Nachman, award-winning documentary filmmaker. Welcome back to the show, Dana.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, on minute 118... begins with Miller checking things out with both Ryan and Toynbee, and ends with Mellish giving Upham some instructions. So yesterday we basically mostly had a montage the entire episode. Today sort of continues that a little bit more of these men getting prepared in order to for this battle, this upcoming battle of what's going to happen. And this minute begins, I mean, first of all, the first second of this minute has such a great shot where we see, you know, Miller and Ryan and Toynbee walking towards the camera. But if you look in the background, you see smoke and you see fire and you see these bombed out buildings, stuff like that. It really gives us an amazing impression as to what's going on in this little town. And to top that off, there's a chair. I wouldn't necessarily call it a recliner, but there's like a chair that's just sitting on the side, which looks as if it's something that, these guys just would be relaxing in if they're not working. Because it seems completely out of place, because it's next to all the various sandbags, you know, at the positions that they've set up and stuff.
You probably talked about this in previous episodes, but where was this shot? Do you know?
I do not know. I'm pretty sure this was shot in France, but I do not know that for sure. Where you're talking about this particular scene or the movie in general?
Just the movie in general.
The movie in general was from what I understand, it was a mixture of of doing it on the soundstage and doing it in different places. And they filmed a lot in England and Ireland. There's some places in France also. I know the big battle scenes, from what I understand, were mostly done in Ireland, because most, like, Omaha Beach was done in Ireland. Ramel, which is where they are now, was in England. The scene where they went against the radar tower, that was also filmed in England. Those are the ones that's what I was able to find out. Yeah, and it only took them basically 2 months to film this movie.
That's
from
cool.
June to August 1997. I mean, that's also pretty amazing that it only took them 2 months to do this whole thing. Because it seems as if it's something that would take a lot longer than 60-day filming schedule.
Totally.
You would think. Unless the information on IMDb is incorrect. Mm-hmm. You know, that could be true.
Yeah. I'm sure
not. No, of course not. Everything on IMDb is pure fact.
Exactly.
And as Miller is walking, so he's talking to them, and he goes, well, for me, the best we can do, that forward machine gun is not in a terrible firing position. And this position right here, this is the Alamo. So he's again pointing things out as he's walking and showing us different things.
Right.
Or showing the men at the same time by showing us, you know, about what he thinks about about the way they've set things up. And I find it really interesting that they refer to this area across the bridge as the Alamo. Do you know anything about the Battle of the Alamo?
Not really. I mean, I think it's just a reference to how important it is, right?
Well, yes and no. It's basically the last stand. That's what they're saying. That's what he's saying.
Right.
It's not just the importance of it. This is the position where we're going to fight to the death. That's the
right. And they already teed that up also, right? With the why, when Private Ryan was talking about why he couldn't leave, they set that up, right?
Yeah. they set it up saying that, you know, this is where we're going to make our last stand. You know, that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, it's another example of how they're doing these callbacks, you know, that they're setting things up and then really, and then amping it up so that you really, you're invested and you care so much in the stakes of what these guys are doing this for.
Which makes sense because that's what they want. They want us to care about these characters. They want us to care about everything that they're going through.
Right.
So it's done very well. And again, it's sort of a, you know, I like the walk and talk they do here also. You know, and again, this is all like pre-Sorkin. You know, when, you know, the West Wing came out a year later. The West Wing came out in 99. So, you know, the whole idea of a walk and talk, you know, wasn't set in stone that's what they do in, you know, in TV shows and movies. But here, you know, he's pointing things out as he's walking, you know, which is great.
Right.
Yeah. I love the way that he's doing it. So, right. So the Alamo is a mission in San Antonio, Texas. I've actually been there. I was at a conference in 2009, I think, in San Antonio. And so I skipped one of the sessions of the conference to be able to you know, go visit the Alamo. I said I had to go. Because I'm actually a big fan of the John Wayne version of the movie The Alamo from 1960.
Okay.
So, like, I know a lot about the history and stuff like that. And you know, to be able to go there is just, like, really cool also. But, again, it's been, 15, 16 years since I was there. So I don't think I'll ever be back in San Antonio, but it would be nice to be able to go back. The one thing that I found out afterwards is they have, like, a mock-up about, I think, like, 10 miles outside of town, where you can go there and see, you know, how it was set up back when, you know, back in 1836, you know, that type of thing. Because what I saw was just the ruins of what was left, you know, that type of thing. So basically there was a siege that lasted 2 weeks. There was a 13-day siege where the Mexican troops were under Santa Anna, wanted to take over the Alamo, which was a mission, and there were approximately 100 Texans that were there, that were that wanted to, you know, fight off these Mexicans. And again, I'm not going to get into the whole story and stuff like that. Anyone who's interested, you can probably either see the 1960 version of the Alamo made by John Wayne, or there was a remake with I'm pretty sure it was Dennis Quaid in 2004. I don't like that one as much as the original, you know, the 1960 one. Basically, of all the Texans that were there, and they were joined by a whole bunch of men from Tennessee, including Davy Crockett and whatever, that there basically there were no survivors out of all the men, and there were a few women and children that were able to get out like the night before the final battle that made it out. But there are rumors that there were approximately 7 Texans who surrendered, and Santa Anna just executed all of them on the spot. Yeah.
Wow.
There are rumors that Davy Crockett was actually one of them. There are accounts of the fact that Crockett's body was actually found surrounded by at least 16 corpses of Mexican soldiers that he killed. So it makes it a little more difficult to believe that there was actually a possibility that he surrendered and was then you know, killed.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. The idea is that this is where we will make our last stand, you know, come hell or high water. That's what it is. I mean, it's just funny that the way that he says it also, he goes that, you know, this is the Alamo. They push us back this far. Last man alive blows the bridge, which, you know, also tells us it's foreshadowing what's going to potentially be happening, you know, later on. And then Toynbee says to him, well, we only got a 30 second delay on that fuse. So let everyone know that if you're the last man, you better hurry your ass off or you're not going to be alive long. So, I mean, I just find it really interesting because 30 seconds is probably a lot for somebody to be able to run, you know, from that perspective. So, you know, we don't know the exact distance of where they have to go, but it's just interesting the way that they explain this to us again. You know, when I get to that final scene, I wonder if it will be 30 seconds from when, you know, when they try and set the explosive.
I bet it's not.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, I've heard that this Spielberg guy is pretty good. You know, I've heard some good things about him. So I don't know.
Well, he knows that nobody's counting except for you.
Well, because he never expected someone to be going through this movie minute by minute and discussing everything. So.
Right. And he's not doing it for, I mean, realistic, but he wants to keep moving, you know. Right. So.
Okay. That's true also.
It's not a documentary.
No. And then Ryan pipes up and he goes, Captain, where am I during all this? He goes, never more than 2 feet away from me. And that's not negotiable. And then Miller just keeps walking. You know, like he's basically showing that, you know, I'm not even going to discuss this. These are my terms. And there's no take it or leave it. It's take it. You know, that type of thing. I guess it sort of makes sense that, you know, Miller is taking it on him upon himself to be the one who will make sure, you know, to ensure Ryan stays as safe as possible. Or that doesn't do anything stupid, maybe. Maybe that's more what he's trying to make sure of.
I mean, well, he's already pushed him to this point, right? That they're there and they agreed with him that it was important enough to not follow the orders exactly. Right. So that's as far as he's getting with what he wanted. The rest is
okay.
You know,
right. That's true. And then the shot changes, and we see Mellish and Upham as they're walking back and forth. And then Mellish says, I'll go get some ammo. Come on. And he goes, hey, Upham. Yeah. Listen to me, all right? Yeah. You're listening? Yes. All right. We're going to be displacing and falling back like crazy sons of bitches. And as they're walking, they pass someone else who goes, right up there. Which is interesting to be getting, you know, this someone just throwing that out there. and then he goes, so you got to be Johnny on the spot with the ammo or we're dead. Right. You understood that? Johnny on the spot. Yeah. So again, this is more foreshadowing about everything that's going to happen here.
Totally.
And I love the fact that he tells him that he needs to be Johnny on the spot. Do you have any idea what that term means?
No. I mean, I know what it means.
Right. I mean, more or less, like, what he's saying is you need to make sure that
you're on top of
this. You have to be the right person. You have to be the right place at the right time. Yeah, that's the idea.
Right. Right. Yeah, this is another one of those big, like, every piece of dialogue is used for a purpose. You know, they're not going to leave this hanging, right. You know, because in the end,
you can edit it away. Let's put it this way. Anyone who's listening to this has probably seen the movie. So if you want to reference something that happens in the future, that's
yeah, I mean, we know that he, you know, didn't do that. So we're saying, I mean, he's in a really good character because, I mean, and also here he's smoking, right? Which is another callback from before where he had never smoked.
Well,
right?
I think tomorrow he talks about smoking a little more. So we'll hold on.
Oh, but he is. Didn't he do his first, have his first puff before?
He had his first puff, but.
Yeah. And
no, because he was sharing a cigarette with Steamboat Willie.
Right, And so now, though, he's smoking more casually, right? Whereas before it was a big to-do. So this shows a progression of what's happening to him. But he's also still the, like, little babe in the woods of the scenario. And then that kind of comes to a head later.
Yeah, for sure. Did you notice that there's, like, there's a huge sign behind as the two of them are talking?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see what it says?
Is it Suisse?
Yeah. Yep. Something like that. I don't know how exactly it's pronounced. I think it's Suisse. Something like that. Do you have any idea what that is? What that means?
I thought it maybe was Swiss. But I have no idea, really.
Okay. It's actually a French brand of bitters.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
It was a drink that was first marketed in 1889 at the Paris World Fair. And, it was made by a man named Ferdinand Moreau. He created it in his family distillery. And then about 10 years later, they changed the name to Suze, S-U-Z-E. You mentioned something about Switzerland before, because there is a river by that name in Switzerland, and they claim that that might be one of the reasons where he was visiting there when apparently he got the recipe for this drink when he was in that area.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's one of the rumors that apparently in one of the in a famous Picasso painting there is a Suze.
Uh-huh.
The painting is known as Verrez et Boudelet de Suze. I don't really know what that means. Anyone out there who knows French would be able to tell me what Picasso's. It has something to do with the drink.
Oh, that's okay. wow, cool.
And it was the sponsor of the Tour de France in between the wars. And it eventually became one of the most popular alcoholic drinks in France. So it's great that they have this little, connection, just showing those letters in the background.
Right.
It doesn't look like, maybe that's the way they did ads back then.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's funny.
But it works.
Yeah.
I like the way they do it.
That's so cool. Yeah, I know. I like it too. It's very noticeable.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was some kind of a product placement of some kind.
Yeah. Which again, it shows the attention to detail
here. Yeah.
We've talked about this before with the other things we've seen on the walls and stuff like that, where this is telling us, okay, this is the type of thing that was on the wall back in 1944.
Yeah, it's so cool.
That's what it comes down to. So yeah, I like the way they show
it. Yeah, me too.
And that's how this minute ends. So did you have anything else you wanted to talk about in this minute?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it was just very interesting how there was like a lot packed into it. You know, the setup at the end that we were just talking about, plus, the ending. I just thought it was a real chock full minute. They got a lot out of that minute.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And we get to know about the Alamo. We get to know about the fact that where Ryan is going to be throughout this entire battle.
Right.
And Upham is supposed to be Johnny on the spot.
Yep.
So. All right. Excellent. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guests will give their top five World War II movies.
Okay.
So Dana, once again, why don't you tell us your top five World War II
movies? Oh my gosh, I have a lot of like arrows of what I did. Okay. So number five is Saving Private Ryan. Number four is The Pianist, Number three is Schindler's List. Number two is Casablanca. And number one is Oppenheimer.
Interesting. So the Brutalist didn't make your list. That's what you're telling me.
Well, I feel like that one's kind of post-World War II.
Okay, again, I haven't seen it
yet.
Yeah,
so get back to me when you watch it. And but I think it's post is how I kind of looked at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Apparently, you would know much better than I would since you've seen it and I haven't.
Right. Yeah, this is a hard one. I mean, there's a lot of, they're really strong.
Yeah, I mean, again, all of these top fives this season are not easy ones.
No, they're not.
To formally, classify because they're all, really powerful movies.
Yeah.
All right, so Dana, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. My website is dananachman.com. It's been revamped since last time I was on the show, so I'm more proud now to send it to people.
Since yesterday?
Sorry?
Since yesterday?
No, since the prior season. So I'm happier to send people this way. And then just on all the different socials, you can really find me under my name, Dana Nachman.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
My solitude. You